ParanormalWarehouse.com. Social. ParanormalWarehouse.com. Social networking site for fans of the paranormal. Create a profile, upload video, audio, and photographic evidence. Make friends and comment on their findings. Join today for free at ParanormalWarehouse.com.
Hi, this is Dave Rowntree, author of Paranormal Technology, Understanding the Science of Ghost Hunting, lecturer, author, and paranormal researcher. And when you're not busy in the field, do what I do and listen to the Mallard Report.
Hey everybody, it's the Mallard Report.
The opinions expressed in the Mallard Report are those of the hosts and participants and are not intended to and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of any simulcasting radio network or sponsor. All listeners are advised to make their own decision.
Good. We made it, John. We made it.
We did.
We had our little fun there in the beginning, so let's... how are you doing tonight?
I'm pretty good. A little bit beat, but, you know, having off from work and sleep schedules changing and then the holidays here, kind of be expected.
Yeah, I was going to say, the holidays always throw people for a loop, and then, yeah, it's just a big mess, and then you try to get back at it, and it's just tough sometimes, so.
Yeah, I know for me here, it sometimes depends on my neighbors. You know, people, different schedules for hours and lifestyles. It's interesting around the holidays at times here.
I can imagine. Let's start with the simple things. The Midnight Watchman, midnightwatchman.com. That's your group. Give me the rundown. I mean, I just gave you the website, so tell me a little bit more of like where you're from and, you know, just that general stuff that we need to talk about first.
Well, we're based in Bucks County, Pennsylvania here. Percussie, PA is where I live, which is kind of our unofficial home, you know, city base. But we travel pretty much anywhere that we deem we need to. I mean, we've been out towards Gettysburg. We've been to New Jersey. We pretty much go anywhere there's a claim that, you know, we feel we need to investigate, whether it be a, you know, residential or a business or, you know, a public location that we can get into and do something with.
I mean, that's pretty cool. That's I'm having one of those nights already. That's going to be special, John.
Well, every night's special, isn't it?
That's what they tell me. So what's your process? You get a call or an email, and then walk me from that initial contact till, well, the review or the wrap-up or however you want to spin it.
Basically, we'll get either initial call or we'll find out about a story. It's kind of the same difference in that regards. We'll have a situation that we want to look into. Once we decide we want to look into it, residential and privates, like public business type cases, pretty much the same idea. We'll contact the homeowner, or the homeowner will contact us with whatever the reports are that they claim that they're, you know, having, you know, noises in the night, you know, seeing things, you know, yada yada, typical paranormal stuff. We'll look into the history of the place as much as we can beforehand. Like if it's a business, we'll look in, is there a haunted history to it? Try to get a background before we get into the actual, you know, seeing the place and talking to the people a little bit more firsthand. Once we get some of that little bit of background info, we'll set up a meeting to talk to the people or the business at the location, do a little bit of an initial walkthrough just to get a feel for the place, see if there's anything that we can spot that would be causing it. Like if it's an old business, for example, an old home, is there something like carbon monoxide or high EMF that we might be able to pinpoint right away that might be causing some of these weird experiences? And then after talking to people and trying to get a feel for them, you know, what they exactly want. I mean, some people just want to talk about it. They don't really want the place investigated. And that's it. That's the end of it once you talk to them. But till we get there and, you know, meet them face to face, that's just kind of what happens. So we figure out then from there, after talking to the people and kind of seeing the place and judging, you know, some of the stories we may know going in that they haven't said, what's next after talking to them. If they decide to investigate, well, we'll set up a day to investigate or night, you know, whatever works best for the client, you know, business. We'll come out, we'll investigate, you know, whatever it is, 4 or 6 hours or whatever we need to do or can do. If it's a big place and it's limited time, it'll get stretched out over, you know, a couple days or weeks or months or whatever, you know, needs to be done to fully cover the stories. Then the real-time review starts, which is always interesting because real-time review to us basically means that if we record 80 hours of audio, video, or total, we have 80 hours to review. So at that point, we just jump right into trying to review it as quick as possible, which, you know, at sometimes with scheduling for people and jobs, it can be a little bit of a challenge to get, you know, review done as quick as possible. But I mean, using 80 hours as an example, that's another work week of review or 2 work weeks of review. So it's going to take at least a week or two before we can get through it to even narrow down if we have something to look into more or not. Once we get to that point, we narrow down what we think we have or what, you know, was unusual from the review. We'll bring up that stuff to the client and go from there and let them hear it, give them our thoughts, processes on it, and see what they want to do next. If we deem that some of the maybe audio or even some of the video is something that we want to come back, we'll try to debunk it and just go from there basically. Some of the places we'll continue to investigate just to see what we get, to collaborate with what we got before, and most residentials, it just lets people know they're not crazy. Or if it's something like their neighbor's making too much noise or high EMF, we can help them pinpoint that. From A to B, we're pretty much involved with the owners, you know, from the beginning to end, and always there afterwards as well.
Protect them as, treat them as people, not just a case file number. That seems to be one of the overwhelming themes that I hear from different people, that there are so many bad, I don't want to say bad. Yeah, bad's a nice word, that's right. I had another word that I almost skipped to that it was, well, less politically correct for some of these groups that just murder investigations, I guess, for the lack of a better word. They just want the EVPs for themselves. They don't care if the client ever gets to hear them or not. So it's just kind of scary.
Exactly.
So I was just strolling through your equipment because I just always find that fascinating because that's just me. I guess I'm the tech guy on my team, so I guess that's where my nose leads me to first. And I'm strolling down through here. Okay, I've seen all this stuff before, you know, which is fine. But then I'm on the other page, and I get down to gaffer's tape, way down on the bottom.
Yeah, gaffer's tape
I know what it's for, but go ahead and explain what you use it for.
Yeah, gaffer's tape isn't something that you hear about too often in paranormal tools. Basically, gaffer's tape is a lot like duct tape. The biggest difference, well, the easiest and biggest difference, I always describe it as, it doesn't leave a residue. So you can tape it down to things, you know, and you can pull it back up, and it's not going to leave, like duct tape would, a lot of glue or even piece of the backing. So when you go to somebody's home, you have less likely to cause damage. Now, that being said, using tape on any surface, no matter how, you know, sticky, but ability to come off, it still can cause damage, but at least gaffer's tape can eliminate, you know, possibly damaging somebody's hardwood floor or, you know, that type of stuff. It's one of those unsung pieces of equipment that you don't really hear much about, but it's kind of part of the deal too.
Yeah, I think it's people need to recognize and realize that they're going into these places and need to take care of them a little bit better. So
yeah, I mean, I know when I started building the website and I put that up there, some of the people on the team said, well, why are we saying we use gaffer tape? And I'm like, well, I understand on the surface that looks weird, saying that's what kind of, it's almost saying like you use 3M, you know, it's kind of weird, you know, but it is what we use. And that's one of the things I try to always preach to the team is with our website is what we use, we'll show you. If it's on the website, we've used it. Doesn't mean every case we use it, you know, just like I have my hands on a thermal imaging, like video camera right now, a friend lent me. Is that something we're going to use all the time? Probably not. Is it something fun to play with on cases and try some new things? Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
that's not even on the website, by the way.
Yeah, I was going to say, you can have all kinds of fun with that.
Oh, actually, it's pretty cool. The one we have, I've never actually seen one in person. I've only seen the stuff on TV or, you know, like internet images people have of them. And the one we have is actually, I thought was pretty cool. I mean, you walk with it around the like my apartment and you turn around, you can see the footprints. That's kind of a cool thing to, if you take it towards a paranormal end, if you know nobody's been in a room and you see something like that, hey, that's pretty cool, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's all, you've got to take things at face value, but it's cool to mess around with something you've never had your hands on before.
Oh, yeah, I have no problem trying new things. When we first started, I mean, I pretty much didn't want to deal with anything metaphysical, like pendulums, possibility of that, or like spirit boards or anything along those lines that like a pendulum would use, which is because I don't really believe in them too much. It's not, I'm not steady-handed. So for me, that's something I'll never use personally because I can't trust what came of it. I can barely keep my hands still for a second, let alone, you know, a question and answer session. But, you know, if other people can keep their hands still and we can verify that they're not moving much or, you know, to try it, I don't see why not. Yeah, you don't know to actually do it.
Yeah, and so, as I always tell people, sometimes I wonder if we're getting too many batteries into the paranormal field. You know, everything, it seems, yeah. Everything new. Oh, it's run out the K2 meter, the EMF meter, the camera, the voice recorder, I said camera already. Why am I saying camera twice?
You never know. You have multiples sometimes, so, you know, it works.
The video camera, the still camera. Okay, there we go. That's where I was headed with that.
But, well, I have a compass I use too. I mean, it doesn't need batteries, and the idea is the same as an EMF meter, except there's no numbers. If something affects the magnetic field, the compass will move.
Yep.
I mean, how much simpler can you get for an item? You don't need like we said, the only thing you need a battery for is if you need a flashlight to see it. That's it. It's going to do what it's supposed to do, you know, all the time, pretty much.
And hey, with the flashlight, you can still spirit communicate with it, too. Oh, jeez.
Well, see, it's interesting to bring that up. I've used a variation on that. I don't unscrew anything. My thought process is if a spirit's going to turn a flashlight on and off, it can use the stupid switch. I mean, if you talk about spirits touching people or scratching people, you know, why can't it turn a switch on? I mean, that's a simple thing. I mean, not even to get into thermodynamics of, you know.
Oh, yeah. They're...
Not even to go there. It's just so much simpler to say, you know what, if a spirit can touch you and move stuff and make things appear or disappear in theory, why can't it push a switch on or off?
Or make the lights in the room come on. You're sitting in a dark room. I mean, I don't understand why we just.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's so many other ways to do the flashlight session, you know, beyond using a flashlight.
Yeah, it's overrated, I think. But that's just me stirring trouble.
Well, ideas, I mean, again, it's in theory, the idea is great. I mean, if you have a flashlight that's in normal working order and it's turning on and off to, you know, questions in reasonable, you know, amount of time, and it's not batteries or, you know, something along those lines that's causing it, hell, that's great. I mean, but if, like anything with the science end of it, if you can prove the thermodynamics are causing, you know, the way a lot of people do it, you can't call that evidence. Now, granted, I've seen some interesting uses of, you know, flashlights where there's some interesting questions and answers, it seems to be. You know, wasn't there, though, so I can't tell you if the video was edited in a way that, you know, decreased time. Just because it's on YouTube, you know what I mean? It's good, though, but it's hard to tell. I mean, we all should be our worst critics for evidence, but in that case, then we should also take other people's and probably challenge it a little bit more. I know some people don't like that because, you know, they hate being challenged on anything, but it's the way it should be. It's not saying you're wrong. It's just saying, hey, I wasn't there. I need to know what happened, you know, as the investigator.
Yeah, if you're willing to post it, you should be willing to back it up. And my guest tonight is John Fowler of the Midnight Watchman, Eastern Pennsylvania. Somebody was asking
yes.
Where you're from, so I just want to throw that out there so we can get that all cleaned up and squared away before I forget. Because I do that at times during the show, forget who I'm talking. Well, I know who I'm talking to.
I hope so.
I assume everybody else does, but that's the problem. I assume so. But yeah, if you're gonna post a video or especially a picture, I hate people to post just one picture. I hate them. Look
and
at this one
I...
picture and tell me there's something paranormal in it. No, I can't. I've never been there. How am I supposed to?
And I know a lot of us are guilty if you look at our – like I know our Facebook page is one picture of some stuff, you know. But sometimes I know there's – I'm not defending people necessarily because I've shown people other shots of rooms, you know, when they asked. But I know sometimes you get some weird pictures and there's no control pictures just because of the angles or, you know, the time of day or whatever. And that's the unfortunate part sometimes about paranormal stuff is when you get the unusual things that are, you know, above the norm, you can't always backtrack that. And that's part of the fun, I think, of the investigations too, is seeing can you reproduce it or will it show up again and then figuring out why, whether it's a ghost or, you know, car lights, you know, it's just, that's part of the fun of it, I think.
It's a great debate and it's a good one worth having, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So, I was clicking to view something here. Where'd it go? Oh, I was going to talk to you about some of the investigations you've done. I mean,
okay.
I know about Jenny White House and Saks Bridge, but where else do you think is that piques your interest, so to speak?
Stemmy's place in Easton, the former Black Horse Inn, which has been on a few different paranormal television shows. I believe is a very interesting location. I mean, the owner, Al, does call it a unique establishment because the history of the place, they're very laid back and a mixture between a bar and restaurant and kind of diner, old school vibe. It's a very unique place besides the history of the building, which has gone through so many different renovation processes over the different owners. I mean, it started out as like a bed and breakfast pretty much in hotel with the bar, and then at some point, you know, in the 20s, it was almost a speakeasy, I believe. There's sections that are kind of like that, where the basement was used as more of a, I do believe it may have been a speakeasy. I'm not sure if that's verifiable, but it was that time period. And then, of course, the later day, the restaurant added on the back. And pretty much throughout that whole time, you've had, you know, a history of paranormal activity there. And one of the stories we were told when we first met the manager was that a waitress had died there. And that was recent history. I think like maybe 5-10 years before we got there. So, I mean, it was pretty recent for the history of the building. And we don't necessarily believe that just because somebody dies on property, they're going to haunt it. You know, it's like the same way people go to cemeteries to investigate. It's not necessarily a 1-to-1 there for ratios. We looked at most of the history of the reports, which was a gentleman who was shot in the 20s, allegedly by the mob, but they never really found out. Well, we went after that story because that's the one we had the most info on. So that's usually who we kind of, I don't want to say attack, that sounds wrong, but that's who we go after and try to communicate with. The one that's been, you know, believed to have been seen the most was him. And we tried different things, and we used Frank's Box. Or Shack Hack would be more specific. Again, people have different theories on that, but this night when we tried it, in the basement where he was shot, there was curses left and right. F this, F that. Which you shouldn't get on FM or AM radio to that level, obviously. Cursing shouldn't happen.
I hope not. FCC would be happy. They'd make a ton of money, but...
Somebody would have lost their license. It would have been multiple stations. But it was actually at the point where it was literally, like, I think I have to find my notes, but I swear to God, it was probably about 30 different times I was told to F this or F off or just F, you know, ridiculous. And it was actually uncomfortable being down there because it's almost like you were in the middle of a, like, schoolyard would be a good example, in the middle of a fight in a schoolyard, but people around you watching for what's next, you know, that uncomfortable moment. And it got to the point where I'm like, okay, I'm not getting anywhere except this. And this isn't really, I mean, it's good. I mean, it's good because it shouldn't be happening, but you're not really getting answers. I'm not getting any idea who I'm talking to. We then decided that I called out my other member who's really the provoker. He's, Bolton is our provoker. He will go after spirits pretty much like an a-hole that he can be. And it's just the way he is. So I called him down to see what would happen next. Let him, you know, do his thing. It actually shut up. And I'm like, okay, weird. Upon reviewing this now, when I called him down, you hear what appears to be a female voice, which we didn't notice at the time of this going on, say, don't hurt me. Please don't hurt me. And that kind of started right as I called for my friend to come down. to he, you know, was talking to some other members who's down there and like just saying that like what's going on, because, you know, they were getting nothing then. And as they were explaining to him what was happening in the background, this, you know, please don't hurt me, or whenever he asked a question, don't hurt me. And then you actually heard this female voice say, Al, which was the owner. And I also found out too that night then that she died in the owner's arms. I don't remember the exact reason. I do believe it was something with her boyfriend. I believe beat her basically to death. Very sad situation. Both a lot of the EVPs we got through that Frank's box, the cursing, I'm not too sure what was going on at first, but my personal belief listening to the audio and then her is that we kind of got an insight into an argument between those two. We didn't necessarily hear the fight, but we got a feel for what happened in that building the night she died. And it's nothing I've ever experienced before or since on a case. And every time we've been there since then, it's been actually pretty peaceful, feeling and everything else. There's been no weird energy or anything associated with it.
Very, very, very compelling story. I mean, that's the kind of things that people run into.
And most of the stories, yeah, that you hear about that place isn't quite that one. You hear about Johnny the Wop, this is the guy that was killed allegedly by mobsters. You hear about that. Don't mention the waitress, but that story I just told you, you don't hear too often because we don't necessarily talk about that too much. But that's part of the reason that, you know, I think I'm in the field itself, is those moments where you make a connection to something in the past, and I can't explain why, you know, I mean, but we made a direct connection to that case, I believe, through that, and you can't always get that within any investigation.
All right, let's take a hard reset here. My guest tonight is John Fowler of the Midnight Watchman, midnightwatchman.com. I'm going to shift gears on John now. He doesn't know it, but I'm going to ask him a tough question. Not really. He'll like it, though. Tell me about ParanormalDictionary.com.
Well, ParanormalDictionary.com is, for lack of a better term, the Wikipedia version of paranormal things. Wikipedia, for example, unless you're notable, quote-unquote, which means like a TV celebrity or somebody that's been in newspapers or, you know, something that's gone nationally or globally, that's English, isn't it? around the world, you won't be able to have an index page on Wikipedia. It'll get deleted for not being notable, quote-unquote. Well, Paranormal Dictionary, on the other hand, which is the same format as Wikipedia, basically editing and everything else, if you're in the paranormal field, whether it's a individual, a team, a haunted location, you have a place there to be represented, basically. And that's part of my idea was, you know, we don't, as a community, really have too many places that are full of information about not just, like, locations. Like take STEMIs, for example. I was just telling you the story about. My idea is there's been other groups that have investigated that place. If I can find out who they are, they will add themselves to that. You might find out in the long run that, hey, the day we went, the owner had another group in the day before. He forgot to tell us. And it'd be interesting to know what they did or didn't do, what they got, they didn't get. Kind of a team building in a way, because you figure out more connections to what's going on. I mean, we can't all be at locations 24 hours a day investigating and then start to see, you know, patterns or, you know, things that happen all the time. This might help us a little bit with that. Also, just network a little bit, too. I mean, most teams, I would think, try to talk to other teams about what they got at locations to see if they got the same thing. At least I hope you would. I mean, it's nice to try to verify what you got with other groups. And besides that, there's terms on the dictionary site. Events, you know, like the paranormal journeys that me, my group and the dictionary is running next year. Everything's up there. You can find out team members quickly, links to people's websites, like the Midnight Watchmen are on there, the link to our website, our Facebook, Twitter is up there. You know, places we've been, a little bit more detailed and information than just on our website. It's just a good resource of knowledge about paranormal things in general.
And I just posted around the world my paranormal warehouse, or paranormal warehouse, paranormal dictionary. com page, and so you can find that, and it'll be in the blog after the show, of course, so people can go there. Go to my page on that page and go check out the rest of the page. Little push there for my page, of course, because actually that's the only place that you can find the complete guest list without having to go through all my blogs and stuff. So it's rather cool.
So, simplicity at its best.
Yeah, if you want who's been a guest on the show and when they were and all that fun stuff, that'd be the quickest way to do it. It's a little, I've got a few shows I need to update, but that's always the case. They happen once a week and I update there probably not as often as I should, so. But we're getting better at it.
It's a dictionary site, so it's always changing. I mean, new information comes in from, you know, obviously new pages, you know, updates on older pages. There's always something changing on there. It's a good resource. I mean, it's searchable as well. So if you want to look up the history of, you know, location, you know, it's on there. If not, you can help create the page that, you know, we'll use to build it up and get it going.
How many pages right now currently, do you know? Put you on the spot.
I would say at least 400 pages are on there as of right now.
There you go. It's growing because last time I asked you, it wasn't that many. So, and I see.
Yeah,
where to go.
Done a lot. I mean, it's been 1 year in November, and I can't think of the site totals now. I believe it's hit over 3,000 views.
I was gonna say, as of August, I had 200,000. So I'm sure it's over.
Yeah. Definitely. It's jumped a lot, and for a site that's not really promoted as heavily as a lot of other group sites and projects, I'm pretty proud to say that it's been doing really well. And it's, I always call it a user-driven site, which basically means, you know, paranormal teams, people, places need to have some input into this. It's nothing that I just sit there and hunt the web for, you know, to add to it. I'll update stuff when I see it, like terms and other things, and if I know a group went to a place we went to, I'll try to add some things in to just get some content up. But really, it's about teams helping to present themselves a little bit more differently than they've done before in a positive way that people can look at. I don't believe there's anything quite like it on the web. There's a lot of different places that have access to, you know, teams and events, but not quite in a way that's as user-friendly, I believe.
I totally agree. I mean, there's a lot of sites, I almost said something very horrible right there, that are based to be team listing sites and this, that, and the other. But anyways, go check it out. That's all I can say. And, hey, before I forget, we have a mutual friend that I want to give a shout-out to at this point, Brad with Bizarre Tech. I know he's done great things for you, and he's done great things for me, and I'm sure he's going to be listening to this either live or via a podcast, so I just want to give him some love. If you need a website, bizarretech.com. Telling you guys, simple, clean, out the box. He's the man. So,
definitely.
Anything else you want to add to that, John?
No, not really. That's pretty much it. I mean, if it wasn't for Brad, I don't know, if Paranormal Dictionary would have been what it is today with the setup and everything. Cause I mean, I know website stuff, but that was beyond me. This wiki setup. He definitely, helped make that idea come to life. So,
and he's got me out of a couple jams of WordPress that, I mean, WordPress is great once you know how to use it, but there are a couple moments there where you do something a little wrong. And then the next thing you know, you can't get in to fix it. I've enabled maintenance mode on my site. And then I couldn't get back into it to work on it. You know, just little things. Seems cliche at the time. You know, you'd think you'd be able to get back into it. But apparently the version of maintenance mode I had wasn't the correct one. So, well, you live and learn.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now let's get down to the main event with my guest tonight, John Fowler. The Midnight Watchman of ParanormalDictionary.com. Now, he's got an event coming up in September.
Mm-hmm.
Aren't you proud of me? I remembered that without looking, because I have it open, but I'm not looking at it. So
very good.
Tell me a little bit more about what you've got going on there. Well, just okay. I guess we should probably do date, place, and all that fun stuff before we get too far gone.
Sure thing. It's September 21st and 22nd at the Hilton. Yeah, I almost said Hilton. Jeez, that's been one of those days for me too.
Did you get an upgrade that I didn't know about?
I don't know. I don't think anybody could afford a hotel room if we got an upgrade like that. Homewood Suites in Lansdale, Pennsylvania. Paranormal Journeys is what we're calling the expo. Basically, it's a very I don't use the word simplistic, but it's a down to earth with paranormal groups, local vendors, you know, food, fun, and a lot, and some lectures. A lot of the other bigger expos that are going on, even in the area around me this year and working its way towards, you know, the time we're running ours, are really not strict paranormal stuff. You're not really going to meet a lot of the groups that are, you know, the backbone of the field, the ones that are out there doing it. You might meet some ones that are more well-known or more famous, but you're not going to meet the ones that are really, you know, innovating and that are out there and helping people. This is that type of event. You're going to meet groups that are from New Jersey and all over PA, even a couple from New York. I'm working on some other states as well that are, you know, like the Virginias and Maryland, Delaware to come up. Actually, we do have a Delaware one. So basically, anybody that enjoys paranormal, you're going to meet a lot of different teams, a lot of different personalities and ways to go about it. I'm sure people will be selling, you know, all kinds of t-shirts and some other things. Our lectures are very unique at this point that I don't think I've seen any other event have, quite this diverse of a lecture format and style. And I think that's pretty cool considering that we're not even completely full yet with the lectures and our spacing for this outside event.
Yeah. I was just looking at it. Of course I can't see it right now. I was just looking at it and I was going to make a comment. Yeah, you still got plenty of, well, I don't want to say plenty of space available, but you've got space available. You got only one speaker spot left. So, if somebody wants to grab that, they better hurry up or start speaking from their table, which I'm sure no one will bring your PA system and start to, I'm just kidding. That probably wouldn't be pleasant, let's see. But yeah, you've got skeptics and shamanism and protection and safety of the paranormal and all sorts of
crop circles is interesting too with that, because it's part of the paranormal field that most people don't talk about. I mean, UFO aliens is above the norm, I would think, for most people. It's just most groups tend to either you do ghosts and like cryptids or you do UFOs. There are not many groups do everything. And that's something I think a lot of people overlook, just because it's not their, I don't want to say their bread and butter, but that's just not what they do. You know, there's not many teams I've met that have done, you know, all of them. It's usually one or the other, or they just know about it. So it's kind of cool, I think, to bring some different views and things in to these events. I mean, crop circles and aliens is a very interesting subject that most people that study ghosts, you don't really hear them have too many thoughts on that. You don't.
It's true. You don't hear many people having thoughts about that. I know I've never interviewed anybody about crop circles, but again, can't interview everybody. I try, but...
and that's just the way it is. I mean, the paranormal field is almost been, I don't want to say neglected, but pushed towards just spirits and ghosts and possibly some, you know, Bigfoot or something along those lines. And in reality, paranormal is like MUFON. It's just not, you know, it's like a cousin and brother type relationship instead of the family it really is. It's all under the unexplained.
Yeah. I know some paranormal people hate the word MUFON. I mean, it gets their, well, I'll say it, panties in a bunch, for the lack of a better expression. I don't get it. They're a great organization. Well run. You don't hear about any UFO hunter drama.
No, and everybody I've ever met that's been part of MUFON of, you know, any state or any chapter or whatever, you know, I've never had an issue with any of them. They've all been very nice up front. They've actually responded to emails. If you send them an email going, hey, I will you guys come out to do this? They respond back with a yes or no, not just an ignore it and, you know, and I hate to say that because there's a lot of groups I know that you send them emails, you talk to them, and they never respond to you.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to guess why because I don't want to sound negative, but I'm thinking most of them, either they don't care enough about other people or they're just so self-centered they're not worried about it.
They feel threatened by your asking them to do something.
Oh, yeah. I've talked to some different groups about, you know, cases, places I've been that are public. I, you know, try to compare notes and it took me forever to get a hold of one group, which I'm not going to use names, but when I finally did, they said, well, what do you need? I told them, you know, I just want to compare notes. We've been to this place. You've been to this place. You know, your website doesn't show anything, but it says you got stuff. You know, I want to talk. Never got a response back. And yep. It's like, thanks. You know, it's like, and that's one of the reasons I can honestly say they're no longer welcome at that particular business, because apparently they treated the owner the same way, which is, you know, it's pretty freaking stupid to do.
It is.
And you don't do that.
Well, like, you know, I'm sure you listened to last week's show where I talked about leadership, and that's just part of it. Being a stand-up person and saying, hey, here, this is what I got. You're not. It's not like it's a trade secret, a trademark, like you're building a missile or anything. Like, you need to be top secret about it.
No, and honestly, if it's those people do dumb things like that and wonder why a lot of groups are looked at like they're crazy or, you know, insane, because, well, you're acting secretive, and secretive groups tend to be a little nuts. And I'm not just meaning like paranormal groups. I mean groups in general. It doesn't matter whether you're talking, you know, a business group or a sports group or whatever. If you're being secretive and it's showing that you're being secretive, you're not going to be deemed as trustworthy. I mean, there's certain things you definitely need to keep private and, you know, case-wise and stuff. And I'm not talking about that. I'm just talking about if you know that the owner said, hey, this team was out, talk to them, and you tell them that and say, hey, call the owner and double verify it. And they just don't want to deal with it because they feel threatened or, you know, they're afraid that you have better evidence or whatever it is. It's like, you know what? I don't care.
Yeah. I mean, there's a difference though between a public restaurant for just throwing a term on, or a business, I guess would be a better term, and a private house. There's a line there, of course.
Oh yeah.
But if it's a business, like I said, there should be more of an open book. I mean, like I said, you're not turning this, not making a profit off it for sure.
And yeah, especially if the owner says, hey, tell them to contact me, you know,
yeah,
to verify it. I mean, it's one thing if the owner says, hey, I don't want you talking to them. I just want it to go to me and I'll deal with it. I've had that happen too. And then he takes it or she takes it, and then they decide, you know, between the different group or groups what they want to do with it. And that's fine. It's their, you know, right decision.
Yeah. My guest tonight is John Fowler of the Midnight Watchman, the Paranormal Dictionary, Paranormal Journeys?
Yes.
Okay. See, I'm working up. I've been adding to the title all night because I didn't want to start out with it all because it'd make it for a long night. And you can find all of it. You can go to Paranormal Watchman, MidnightWatchman.com, and get all the information there. It all links off there. They're on Facebook and Twitter, and I almost said MySpace. That would have been a tremendous gaffe on my part.
Well, I think we still have a MySpace now. It hasn't been updated probably since I joined Facebook like 5 years ago, so I don't think that would help anybody.
I realized the other day that my MySpace still updates with my status, updates off my Twitter.
Well, at least it's updating.
Yeah, so if anybody's checking it, it looks like I still use it, but I don't. So
I should probably try to do that because I don't touch that page anymore. But just too much to have too many social media pages. I mean, it doesn't really matter which one you choose to, you know, make your home on. It's just got to pick one and go with it. Otherwise, you're going to be spending a lot of time doing updates. There's way too many social networks, to say the least, anymore.
And I'm thinking Twitter's going to be the forerunner here pretty soon because Facebook is just killing themselves.
I wouldn't argue that at all. I think Twitter's just the simplicity of it works quite nicely. I mean, right now I know my blog, the website for Watchmen, is just getting, you know, when I post a new, you know, article or, you know, case page, it gets automatically sent to Twitter, Facebook, and anywhere else socially that I can send it automatically, I'll have it sent to, and I don't worry about it then. So, Twitter, you're on the road, you got Twitter in your phone, most people do now, so it's not like you can't update or answer something.
Yeah. And at iTalk Paranormal, I'm answering tweets. I've been answering tweets all afternoon because I was kind of just a little slow this afternoon, so I've been talking to people all afternoon. And people, I think people respond to that. I hope they do. I think they enjoy it. If not, you're going to get it anyway, so. Because there's another major show that, you know, has 60,000 followers and never talks to any of them. I'm not going to name names. You know that one that's on way early in the morning and has the AM at the end of it?
The one we had a nice conversation tagging him for what was an hour that one night.
Yeah,
he didn't respond.
So,
I mean, honestly, I know me. If I had a zillion followers and it was hard to keep track of it, if I saw the two same names pop up enough in like an hour, I think I would have to just at least read the thread. At that point, just just to see if, like, okay, am I getting bashed or somebody? And then at least, you know, read it and
laugh. I mean,
yeah, I mean, there's a page that somebody created. I don't know who it was. The Same Gentleman's Ego is what it was called.
Yes, I've seen it.
Yeah, you've seen that. And I messaged him the other day and asked him some interesting questions, and he gave me a response back. But then I guess he got bored with my questions back to him that should have been answered. I was thinking, oh, this could be fun, and the guy didn't answer me back, and I'm like, oh, come on.
Yeah.
I'm like, it's, I don't know. I mean, it's good to have networks where you can connect with your fans, but it's also another thing just to stroke your ego the whole time, literally. And some people and groups, unfortunately, do tend to stroke their egos more than I think they should. Yeah. But then again, hey, I guess some people, they need that to survive. I personally don't care about a lot of that. I mean, I care about interaction and general questions. I mean, I have some good fans that are on just Twitter and, you know, that ask questions and, you know, I like and I talk to, and same way Facebook. And that's great. You know, that's the way it should be. I don't believe just because you have a TV show or you were on a TV show, you're any more knowledgeable than, you know, you or I. I mean, there's a few people that have had shows or been on shows that are very knowledgeable. I mean, I will not deny, you know, that certain things,
right,
you want to ask them those questions, but just because you're on TV don't mean, well, crap, you know, it doesn't. I mean,
it doesn't.
I mean, congratulations, you've reached another level in the field of notoriety. Hey, cool. But
I don't even know if it's another level, truthfully, with some of these people. It's just a sidestep for some of them.
Yeah. I don't know. I know I was approached about a couple pilots, like, not from networks, but from people.
Oh, pilots. You meant TV shows. I was like, what were you doing in that airport? But oh, never mind.
Yeah. And I look at some of these ideas, and I just go, okay, that was done by, you know, yada yada.
Yep.
That was done by yada yada. I'm like, why would I want to do it that way? Just like I had someone tell me I should do, like, my own radio show, and I'm like, I barely have enough time to keep up on review, let alone keep track of guests and then my own team and then try to do an hour-long show or whatever it is. I mean, and I could do a show, but who knows when it would actually, you know, be put on, because I'd never know when I'd get it done.
It's tough. It's not as – I mean, you think, oh, hour a week with the microphone in front of you, another 20 minutes booking guests, and that's it. No, it doesn't work that way.
No, and I mean, that's some of the problem. It's just – I mean, the idea is pretty simple. You talk.
Yeah.
But the reality of that is it's not that easy. Just like I know video editing is the same way. When you try, like, I've tried to design some things to, you know, set up some little web episodes. And for me, I'm failing at that concept because I just can't put it together. Because I don't think that way. You know, how do you take, you know, 80 hours of footage and cut it down to a half hour?
Yeah.
Or an hour. You know, and make it make sense. And then even if you add stuff, what do you add now? You know, I don't think that way. That's just not me.
You know, you were talking about pilots and TV shows and stuff. And I somebody asked me if I'd ever do a TV show. And, of course, I've denied it to the hilt. But I do have a scenario that I would consider. You ready for this?
Sure thing.
Starting out 2013, bold and across the board. Yeah, you ever see that show with William Shatner called Raw Nerve, where he sits down with somebody and the same, you know, like they're facing across from each other, and he does an interview?
Yes.
That'd be it. That'd be the format I'd do.
And I think that'd be interesting. Whether it would be something that would sell, that's a whole other story.
It wouldn't sell, but that'd be the TV. That, you know, if somebody, that'd be the one I'd do. I think it'd be fun to sit down face to face with some of these people and let them tell their story.
And it would be interesting. And I think a lot of the TV shows, unfortunately, are suffering from, I don't know what the term I want to use is. It's not that they're not entertaining or even, I mean, some of them are unrealistic, like Wanda said in the chat room here, but there's just pieces missing that really show you what's going on. And I just think that coming from people that actually done investigations, you kind of look at that and go, well, that's wrong. And you wonder why the public comes up to you and goes, well, why does it take so long to review 80, you know, 80 hours? And it's like, well, we don't, you know, we actually, even if the, like, say, Pabst does a true, you know, full review, TV show's not going to show 5 minutes of, like, days on end them reviewing. it's just going to be what they came up with, that little, you know, 5-10 minute sit down of, oh, hey guys, I got this. You should hear this.
Yeah.
You know, and
which is all staged.
I get why and all that. And, you know, for timing, I get it. But unfortunately, people don't really see how it is.
Yeah.
And even other groups, which I like their DVDs and things they've come out with on their own, you know, privately, even they kind of like don't show it, but they don't necessarily hide what goes on either. It's a good blend. At least some of them are. And some of the documentaries, at least, you know, it's a documentary. So, you know, it wasn't like last week they did it. It was over the course of like a year, you know, footage and review and building this, you know, product.
Yeah.
And that's just one of those things. So I know a couple groups that do TV documentaries, and I say TV because I think they're aired on like local channels in their areas, that want me to, you know, help find some places for them. And, you know, if I find a place that works that we're going to investigate anyway and we need help with, I'll definitely do it. It's more exposure. But my problem is I always like to know how the stuff comes out. I'm not, you know, being a founder and team leader, I do have a lot of control over where our name goes, you know, and what goes with it. So it's hard for me just to say, oh yeah, just edit that and let's see what happens.
Yeah, just throw it together and I'll watch it when it airs live.
Yeah, and I just, that's just not me, and it bothers me, and that's probably why I'm still looking for some video people to follow us around that we can form our own little film team.
Good luck.
I know. The problem I find in general is most people hate running video cameras.
My joke is they're called tripods, but even that.
Well, yeah, but I'm just saying for like simplicity to have like one.
I know. You have to have an operator if you're going to do something more than.
Yeah, and I've tried a few things, and it's just not working so far. And it's a learning experience, though. So that's the way I look at it. I mean, it's not killing me not to have web episodes.
It isn't? No.
Not so far. I mean, I mean, let's be honest. Web episodes would have helped me create Paranormal Dictionary.
Nope.
That wouldn't have done anything. It wouldn't have changed. They wouldn't have changed probably any places we've been in or haven't got in. Because a lot of the places we haven't got in is because we don't have a TV show on a network. They wouldn't give a crap about a YouTube video. You know?
Yeah, well, you never know. YouTube's very popular. By the way, you can find a majority of the old Mallard reports on YouTube now.
Technology upgrades.
Just saying. Saving some space off the old server there, you know.
Yeah, YouTube has come in handy for website storage space on our end. We don't have to put big video files up on our, you know, our accounts. YouTube handles all that. We just make a nice little link.
Yep. So, like I said, most of the old reports are there. So, actually, I think everyone that is recorded is there. I'll say it that way. There's a few that have went deleted. I mean, went missing.
Well, yeah, I have a couple shows from other networks I've been on that, you know, mysteriously went bye-bye before I had a chance to grab a copy for my own personal records. And it's a shame because some of those shows were pretty fun, you know, but they're just a lost moment. You know, people who heard them know about them. People who don't, you know, sorry. They're gone now, you know, but.
Yeah. I had somebody asking me to review 2012 as for the show. And I said, okay, I'll sit down and write a blog. Of course, it's almost after the show, and I haven't done it yet. So I'll just take a moment and ramble here. The first, I didn't start recording them, like actually of a recording program, until last March. I did almost a year without recording them that way. Hmm. I did Ustream recordings of them, which I've ripped and then uploaded, then we've done the YouTube, but I didn't start actually just recording an MP3 copy of it until, like, March. Which, it just blows my mind now that I think about it, that I'm getting all these downloads across the board on iTunes and other places. I'm shooting myself in the foot about that, but.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing I know that for my website, the Watchman's website, that I need to get back to, you know, soon is we did a lot of Q&As with different paranormal people from, like yourself to some former TAPS members to just different local groups to like Katrina Weidman. It was pretty popular on the website, and I just haven't got people to respond to do them right now. And that's the one feature we started that really took off that unfortunately kind of also died out quickly. I mean, Katrina's Q&A is still probably the most viewed blog ever in a day. I think we had like 500 views on that in like one day or something crazy like that, just for her Q&A. No other pages. And that's pretty big for our website.
I mean, that's pretty big.
Yeah, and it's still the most viewed day ever, obviously, because of that. And, you know, and it's just because people like Katrina, people want to know what she's up to. I mean, she doesn't hide anything on Facebook, but she's not really a social media person who posts a lot of stuff, you know. So people are interested, but there's no information there.
Right.
So people like her, those are like gold mine for groups. You know, if you could get her on, I know you'd get a big hit, for example, because people want to hear her. You know, she's a very nice person. She's one of the nicer people in the field. And that's the type of people that, you know, people like to deal with.
You know, it's scary. So, I'm already booked until May.
Well, that's a good thing.
It is. It's scary though. Cause I was actually tweeting with somebody today who's a former guest in the, He wants to come back on now. There was a time there where his PR person kind of was getting in the way, but they're realizing that people actually do listen to my show. Surprise, surprise. My guest tonight is John Fowler of Midnight Watchman, Paranormal Dictionary, Paranormal Journeys. There we go. It was almost gone there for a minute. But I reeled it in because I closed all that stuff, so... But besides Paranormal Journeys, which is September of this year, what else? What's 2013 hold for you and your pages? And just,
you know, that's a good question. Most of December here, I pretty much, besides some marketing for the expo, I kind of haven't done too much. I took a big step back just to kind of take a vacation, I guess you can say, in a way. Not that I've really stopped working on anything, but I don't go out of my way looking for cases or anything. So as of right now, I can honestly say we have nothing planned as of today besides the expo. Now, besides Gettysburg, actually, in about 2 weeks. But we go to Gettysburg every year. We'll be doing the Jenny Wade House, the orphanage, and possibly another building that only one group has done, but I'm waiting on a response back from that. Our Gettysburg trips are always, for me specifically, they're always very fun. My first full-fledged investigation was Gettysburg in 07, and it's always like coming home in a way when we go out there. It's one of those things that, as far as I'm concerned, every year as a team, we go out to Gettysburg. There's just no question about that. Never will be.
And Gettysburg is such a neat place.
It is. Historically speaking, it is amazing, and just the atmosphere in general and the history and not even the paranormal history. I mean, even though a lot of those stories are very interesting, it is just a very cool place to visit that's very important to American history that I think more people should visit and take part in.
And the fun game that I played the summer we were down there is find reenactors and take pictures with them.
Yeah, if you can find reenactors, you can get some good pictures, especially depending what time of year you go down.
Yeah, just go ahead, just walk up to them. They're always willing to take a picture of a stranger. Trust me. And the ones that aren't, do it anyways.
Well, like we told, like when we did the orphanage the very first time, one of our newer members, after we had a conversation, you know, most of us, our backs was to the entrance, so we couldn't see the street level. One of our newer members said to me, he goes, oh, yeah, a couple minutes ago I saw a guy dressed in a Civil War uniform run by. This is like midnight, mind you. I'm like, you saw somebody in a Civil War outfit run by and you didn't say anything. He goes, I was a reenactor. I'm like, how the hell do you know that? It's midnight. Do you expect to see somebody from a play getting out at midnight in full costume?
Yeah.
And he just looked at me. And and I could see that look in his eyes. He's like, oh, crap. Because nobody else saw it. And then, you know, and I'm like, all right. I'm like, and of course he walks outside to look. And I'm like, he said that was like 10 minutes ago. What are the odds you're going to see someone just hanging? And it was a cold, wintry night. You're not going to see anybody hanging outside. You know what I mean? You just didn't. It was freezing. You don't want to even be anywhere near a window that type of cold night. And that's one of the things I try to tell the new members is, you know, using that as an example, you never know when you're at a place like Gettysburg what you're really seeing. You kind of have to be extra careful. You know, if you think you see a reenactor, kind of be aware what time it is. Like if it's midnight, you might want to double check that even more so than during the day. During the day, I understand blowing that off because you see people walking around. In this case, I believe there was a theater play type building down the road. So is it possible that was an actor or somebody studying late? Yeah. But who knows? And that's the fun part of it.
Better safe than sorry. Better track it down and make sure, because moments like that don't come around often.
No, I mean, I saw at Jenny Wade the one year we didn't investigate because we just couldn't find a place out there, but we just went out basically to see the history. I was talking to a friend of mine who was a tour guide outside Jenny Wade right near the end of the night, the last tour of the night. I was just talking to her and a couple of the tour guides. I look over to my right, and about 100 feet away, 200 feet away, I see this woman. It looked like a Victorian-era type dress from, like, the 1870s, walking, you know, hair in a bun, like, just kind of, like, gliding. And I thought, did I really just see that? And then, like, I look back, and it's gone. I'm like, maybe I'm thinking my mind's playing tricks on me. You know, that type of deal. And next thing I know, the little patio at Jenny Wade, the door, which is weighted shut, I'm sorry, weighted open so it doesn't move, just closes, this little gate. The heavy little gate, once it's in either position, whether it's open or closed, it does not move without a lot of force, and you have to physically, like, hold it all the way to the next, you know, spot for it to stay. In full view of, like, three people, and we were like, well, that's weird, you know, because no one touched it. Thought that strange. Then the one tour guide that's kind of been there a while just goes, well, I'm going to go inside and lock up the front door. And, you know, they said, okay. And I was talking to my other friend the whole time we were there. So she never moved to do it. The other tour guide was with the people. They don't lock doors behind them because they're in front of everybody. You can't lock a door that's behind people when you're in front. They went through and the guy came back around and said, oh, the door's locked. Let me double check that, you know, she locked it because they were having problems with the door before too. Door was locked for no reason whatsoever. No one touched it. The main door was locked now on the other side of the building. I'm thinking that's weird, and I look over then the other direction. There's that same woman I saw before kind of gliding the other way and just kind of gave me this, which just looked right at me, kind of gave me a smile, and then disappeared. Basically, I'm like, okay, I have no idea who you are, but she pretty much showed herself to me to say, hey, that was me. And I know some, like, mediums and psychics that I kind of do trust that, you know, not all mediums and psychics I can say I trust, and they don't even know who this person is. It's kind of interesting.
That it is. So let's get out. I've got about a minute left, so before we get too far gone, because we'll be out of time before we know it. Give me your websites one more time.
Well, midnightwatchman.com is my main paranormal one, and paranormaldictionary.com is the Paranormal Dictionary, the Wikipedia version for the web.
And if you want to do a Q&A, email John there off the Midnight Watchman page and say, hey, I'll do one for you. Let's get this going again. And if you need somebody to do one, I'll do one again. So just saying.
Okay. I'll keep you in mind then, Jim.
I'm not scared, even though I'm not a great writer, but I'm not scared.
That's what grammar check and spell check's for. I'm horrible. I've wrote stuff and I'm like, wow, that's not even English. You know, you got to fix it.
All right. Well, I want to thank you for coming on, and I'll talk to you again later.
All right. Well, thank you for having me.
ParanormalWarehouse.com, social networking site for fans of the paranormal. Create a profile, upload video, audio, and photographic evidence. Make friends and comment on their findings. Join today for free at ParanormalWarehouse.com.
Hi, this is Dave Rountree, author of Paranormal Technology, Understanding the Science of Ghost Hunting, lecturer, author, and paranormal researcher. And when you're not busy in the field, do what I do and listen to the Mallard Report.
Hey, everybody, it's the Mallard Report.
The opinions expressed in the Mallard Report are those of the host and participants and are not intended to and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of any simulcasting radio network or sponsor. All listeners are